The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode of Heroes of the Horn is brought to you by Thomas of House Sweeney. Welcome to Heroes of the Horn, a Wheel of Time podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I am Sir Ezra. Welcome to our Wheel of Time book club. The horn has sounded, and we have answered the call. Today we are covering The Fires of Heaven, Part 8, Chapters 52 through 56.
As, you know, I always introduce the podcast. Excuse me there. I'm always introduce the podcast, and I say, I am Sir Matt. Well, I could actually be Matt at this point, because we have a recast. And I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast. I know we did a YouTube video on it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, sort of big news, really, for those of you guys who just listened to the podcast, is for better or for worse, don't know, man.
Right. Barney Harris is out.
Barney Harris is out. Matt is Matt Cawthon. So he did season one. They're filming season two right now. And we have a new person.
Yeah.
Recast.
Yeah, his name, I think you say it Donald Finn. Yeah. Donald Finn is the new guy. And what's interesting is, I don't know, maybe this is not how they wanted it released. Like this was, I forget which organization it was that broke the news on this, but a lot of different places like Dragonmount confirmed it. They actually, I think, emailed Amazon Studios and got a confirmation on it. And yeah, he's been recast, and there's just no information as to why, and we probably don't need any, and we probably don't necessarily need to go down any deep, dark speculation, but I mean, the harmless stuff is, it happens sometimes, right? I mean, it happens in other shows, and it's a part of the business, and it's unfortunate. Hopefully it is fortunate, though, for, like, everyone involved in their own personal lives and all that stuff. As far as, like, the show, yeah, it's a little awkward. It's going to be a little bit of a hiccup. We're going to watch this first season with Barney Harris in there playing Matt, and I hope he does a great job. I hope he does a phenomenal job, right? Because we want a good show.
Yeah, exactly. And we don't know, you know, we don't know why the recast was done. I mean, at this point, I don't believe, right?
No, I haven't seen anything.
It's actually been over a week. Just so we know that he's not going to be at that panel, right? That's coming up. But yeah, I mean, we don't know why he dropped out. There could be a lot of reasons. I read that Rosamund Pike, said she's like, I moved my family to Croatia, right?
Yeah.
To get all set up for this. So I mean, that could be a big deal. Maybe if you're Barney Harris, you're thinking, and I don't want to spend the next 8 years, right, living in Croatia. It could be incredibly demanding.
Yeah.
Could be an incredibly demanding role. You're sort of locked in, right? You sort of can't do a lot of other stuff when you're in some of these huge productions. So that could certainly be part of it. Maybe he thinks, I did my season one. The show could be big. This could open up a bunch of other opportunities. So there's a lot of actors that actually talk about why they choose roles they do. Some of it has to do literally with just location. James Spader, right, who does – he's in The Blacklist. He was in The Office. He played Ultron in Age of Ultron. I love him, so I've watched a bunch of interviews with him, and he's like – he's like, I will always choose roles in New York over roles in LA, just because he likes New York. He just likes New York more. So that could be, you know, that could be a big part of it too. So maybe that's why he is dropping out of it. But
yeah, I mean, I can tell you right now, man, it is. So by the way, as is back in Germany, right? I'm from Ohio. I'm back in Germany. You know, just here spending time with my girlfriend before I kick off a new job, and it's like. It's a long ways. It's like there's jet lag involved. I mean, my recovery time was ridiculous on this. Like, it's just, I think it's a lot. And if you were traveling back and forth and during the pandemic, it could be harder. I can see how it'd be a lot more difficult to complete that type of travel. Maybe there was some pressure to move there, to stay there. And maybe he has a significant other or something, you know, who knows? And that's the type of stuff we don't want to go down any crazy rabbit holes. But I think there's just a number of things we don't want people pointing to. You can get carried away with this type of speculation. That's what we don't want to do. It probably is something just as simple as location, time. It could not even be his decision. It could be something with Amazon Studios or whoever it is, right. Who wants to kind of go in a different direction. They saw season one or you know, whatever. And that's okay. So, like I think you said this in our YouTube video, like if the new Matt we get, you know, we get this new Donald Finn and he does a really good job, then we're looking at him for hopefully 6 to 7 seasons thinking that's awesome, you know?
Right. And we'll sort of forget that he was recast.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of how it goes, right? I mean, when I think of Dario Naharis in Game of Thrones, I forget that the other guy played him.
Yeah.
Right. The guy with long hair first season.
Right.
There were actually two other people that played the Mountain. Right, in Game of Thrones, but the only one we remember is Hathor Bjorgsson, right? Because he plays him for the rest of the things. I always forget that Dumbledore and Harry Potter was played by a different guy until I go back and watch the first two movies. You're like, oh, yeah. So, fortunately, they sort of look similar enough. Although they are trying to play this guy up like he's some big actor or something, like of Witcher fame. He's in The Witcher for like...
Yeah, I know.
1 minute, okay? I mean,
yeah. Well, and the thing is, I'm cool. Like, if he's a really good actor and does a really awesome job, that's you want both. I'm sure both of them are, right? Barney, I'm sure, is great. A lot of this cast I have not seen besides Roseman Pike. I've not seen a lot of the other individuals, and I've tried to go look up clips of them in movies or TV shows and things like that. But this is going to be big, I think, for a lot of them. So I'm excited to see all of them come out here and just. Give it their all, give it their best, and really, really dive into these characters. You know, something early on, I remember Barney Harris like reached out to some YouTubers and some content creators for Wheel of Time and wanted to know the series better, wanted to understand Matt Cawthon and wanted to understand that role, which I thought was cool. You know, someone who was really trying to dive into their craft and get a better understanding of it. So, you know, maybe he did have some struggles kind of connecting to the character and figuring out, you know, how he needs to be portrayed, and that's they wanted to go in a different direction. Either way, it's just news, and we're just kind of telling you guys about it. We wanted to bring it up, talk about it on the podcast, and share it with you because it's going to be interesting. The panel, by the way, New York Comic Con, that's this Friday. I think it's October 8th, right? Is going to be the panel. It's pre-recorded. They've already recorded it, and it's going to be there. We think we're hoping there's going to be a trailer. So definitely hit up Matt and myself at Super Games Bros and at Womprat. Just to give us your thoughts, send us a pigeon if you want to at thehornofalir@gmail.com and tell us what you think about the panel, because I'll be doing videos that day live from Germany, my friends. So, yeah. But
okay, as well, attention to our listeners, okay?
Yes.
Whether you're here in Randland or you're across the galaxy, all the way from Australia, Germany, Houston, Do we have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Be sure to kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped to get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20. And as you know, I have to say here, you know, we are talking about the Wheel of Time TV show, obviously. And then we think about sort of it's an Amazon show. Who's Papa of Amazon? Well, that's Jeff Bezos, my friend.
Yeah.
Just sort of second richest. You know, he and Elon go back and forth. But either way, it says here that you can use this in zero gravity, and Jeff Bezos knows a thing or two about zero gravity, okay? Because yes. He was just in outer space. Do you think he was Manscaped? Because he's clean cut up top.
He is clean cut up top. Yeah, I was thinking about that. And I mean, yeah, he probably did. It seems like it's been tested in outer space. I mean, I don't want to say that because it's not in our talking notes, but I mean, it seems like you could imply or infer that yeah, it's been used in outer space, and it's awesome. I mean, it has the we get the Performance Package 4.0, Weed Whacker. It's like having a little astronaut to chop your worst weeds up top in your nose and ear. I don't think we've read that one. That's pretty solid.
I don't think so either. But I would say Jeff Bezos uses it. I can't confirm that, but if I had to assume, I think it's probably safe to assume.
You know who else probably? Look at the trailer for Wheel of Time recently. Rand. He looks clean as all get out. You see him in there with Egwene?
What's his name? It's like Jared
Yosha?
Something? How are we ever going to pronounce that?
His last name is what I really can't pronounce. But yeah, he looked good. He looked really good.
I can barely say Teron Grial, okay? That took a lot for me. So now we're going to have this in. But anywho, guys, be sure to get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That is 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com for a clean Trinity and beyond. Your space balls will thank you.
Matt, we are into the final part of this book, and I have been waiting a long time to talk about this with you. And yeah. You guys can probably hear it in Matt's voice right now. Like, what'd you think? I mean,
you know, I don't know, man. This book just didn't do it for me. I don't know why. I guess.
Now, don't hold back.
Well, from the start, let me say this. And I'm not. This is really the only book out of the five we've read, which now we have dived a little bit into New Spring, as and I've been reading the we just did the sort of the graphic novel,
right?
Just to gain a little bit of knowledge there, and actually I don't think anything was really spoiled for us.
Mm-mm.
So yeah, I don't know, man. I think from the get-go it's just that The Shadow Rising ends on such a high.
Yeah.
Because like everything feels like an agreement. Perrin just told the White Cloaks off after he just saved. Perrin just saved Emmonsfield, Two Rivers. Hey, and told the White Cloaks basically, hey, why don't you go F off?
Yeah.
Like, to their face.
Yep.
You want to come back? I'll be here. Type of thing. So it's like awesome.
Epic
and then
moment.
Rand and Cooladin are having this like epic stare down too, where Cooladin's like, no, I'm the Dragon Reborn. It's like, okay, fine. And Rand's like, all right, buddy, well, let's just see about it.
Yeah.
And then it's like, we take such a left turn at the beginning. It's like, okay, it starts. And it, first word, Elyida. And I'm just like, I'm out. You know, like from the, yeah, literally, I read the prologue. I was like, oh my God. I was just so ready. Because I jumped. And when I finished Shadow Rising, I jumped right into this book. Because I was like, dude, I'm ready to go.
Right.
And then you go and you're like, okay. What, like, is Perrin going to come back? Where are we at? Because I was like such a high with that. And I don't know, man. This whole book just kind of, for me, I don't know. It's just, I think the last book was so high that this one was just harder to sort of live up to for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there were some parts that were drug out, you know, a little bit more, like the sailing. Okay, there's a lot of sailing going on, right, with Nynaeve and Egwene. And that stuff, I think, maybe is starting to wear on me just a bit. Sort of the, like, okay, whatever, we get it. Nynaeve's mad. All right, whatever.
Right.
So a little bit there. But really, I think I was fine until Cooladin was killed off screen, right, or off page.
Right.
That, for me, was just like, all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the ending, I actually do think of this, was kind of cool. I think, you know, we our good buddy Sergeant been on, he said it, like, completely took him out. Like, he did not like the ending, which we'll get to here in a bit. I actually was sort of okay with it. But, yeah, I don't know. This whole book for me was just kind of like, I don't know. I just was never... super into it. I think finally getting some of the tension between Rand and Aviend over was cool. So that's
sure. That was good. That was good.
So I enjoyed that. And then early on, we were sort of traveling with Suwan and Min and Loghain. I was like, all right, this is cool. And then it's just like, as the chapters go on, it's like that just kind of stopped.
Just drops.
And it just kind of drops. And so I was just... that was, like, so cool to see them on the road and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'm going to be dead honest and say this is my least favorite book so far. I would put it as my number 5 because we've read 5 books. I would say the Fires of Heaven, Dragon Reborn, Eye of the World, Shadow Rising, Great Hunt.
Great Hunt, yeah. Yeah, I hear you on that. And like you said, you're comparing Wheel of Time books to Wheel of Time books, and there has to be, when you do a ranking like that, right? I mean, something's got to be at the bottom, and we're in 5 books. So yeah, right now, I get it, because I kind of like the ending here. I think it's cool. I think some of the power battle stuff is interesting, but I get where, because now, when I think back on how I read through the series, I blitzed through it the first time. I mean, it was nonstop. So the stuff that was like maybe would sit with you for a while, because you and I do other projects, and you'll read a batch of chapters and then go away from it for a while and then come back to it, and it's almost tougher because you might have left it at a low, right? At a low point. Whereas like I did nothing but plow through it, so all of the lows were minimized because I was hitting all those highs so quickly. I think that really does affect how you read this series. And gosh, if you were someone who was reading it book by book, I have a friend who has, when it was released, he read it like, okay, Eye of the World comes out and then The Great Hunt comes out. So he went back and read Eye of the World. And then when the third book comes out, he read 1 and 2 and then 3. And so he kept kind of building that speed and momentum up through the current book. But if you just read this book when it came out, I bet you would be scratching your head a little bit going like, what? You know, like some of it's just,
and I think,
yeah,
and I think it also just tends to be like, which, because I would not say that I generally don't think that there are characters that I see. So often people say, who have talked to who finish, like, I can't stand this character. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think I actually go through waves of liking them and disliking them.
Right.
Right, and so, like, there are moments where, even though I've heard Nynaeve, you know, tug her hair a million times, there are moments where I still find it funny, right? Or sort of, you know, like, you know, I enjoy, you know, because just depending on what's going on with it. So I would say that I go through waves of liking and disliking characters. And I think a lot of it just has to do with maybe what is going on around them sort of at the time. And so for me, it's just, because I really enjoyed what was going on with Perrin last time. And
yes.
I was like, man, I want the follow-up to that. And a lot of people say they can't stand Perrin. And a lot of people hate Fael, from what I've heard, as people can't stand Fael.
Right.
But I enjoyed it. And so, you know, I think that was like a big letdown for me, this book, that there wasn't Perrin. Just because what happened was so awesome and exciting. And so we just dropped that, and I was just like, dude,
come on. It's a whole book. So like this book,
Right.
Probably could be on average a little higher for you if there was some continuation of like something to carry you through. But instead, you get attached to right. like the low gain story, and then you're like, well, then where's that? You know, and then that right. dissipates.
Well, and we had left the last book left on such a high. So it wasn't just the Perrin thing. It's also the last book left on such a high point of this. We're going to get a fight between Rand and
Cooladin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we just kill him off screen, and it's like, then what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Where are we at? What are we doing? And then it almost does feel, this is something, you know, Sir Jimmy told us, he felt like the whole, which we'll get to, it's all right, we're talking about yeah. it anyway, Moraine's death today by Lanfear feels like it comes literally out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's almost like he needed a way to finish the book. And
yeah.
And that's yeah. and he said he like that like for him it's I think it's almost completely derailed him on the series. I think he could probably pick it back up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And finish it. But yeah, it does because that was sort of you had built this tension
mm-hmm.
that this is what it's going to be and then you have to shift it cuz you just throw it away. I mean, it's just so I don't know, man. This book, I'm kind of out.
I know. This, so, okay. Real quick, shout out to our friend, Sir Jimmy of House Nuts, the Fantasy Network. Go check out his YouTube channel. He does a great job, reviews books. So he's definitely into fantasy and book series, right? So just like us, he's into all those different things, and he reads a wide variety of them. It's for a lot of people, I get why the Moraine scene, what's going on there, you know, with Lanfear? I mean, and the hinting sometimes, the foreshadowing to it is so subtle that you get that, okay, maybe it's maybe it's, you know, because of like just a lack of hinting that Robert Jordan does that it seems abrupt. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, but I thought the battle with Ravin is pretty cool. I mean, that's the part
I think totally differ on the ending. I do still think the Ravin thing is kind of cool. I didn't dislike that nearly as much as he did. I think.
Yeah.
So anyways, there is build up for that, and we have been talking about him a little bit throughout the book itself. So I hear. Let me just pull this up here really quick. So, because I saw this on the Wheel of Time subreddit, and they're actually really great about not spoiling stuff for later on. It's actually one of the better subreddits literally out there.
Mm-hmm.
This question was posed, and it was posed 2 years ago by Major Mata. Says, reading The Fires of Heaven, and I have a question about Cooladin. What is everybody's thoughts on Cooladin being killed off page? One of the main antagonists for this book apparently fights Matt and gets beaten quickly. I was looking forward to this fight, but now I feel kind of let down. I thought the Aiel were quite formidable, and I didn't realize Matt was that skilled at fighting. I'm guessing he could beat a guy who's trained since he was a kid due to his past, past life, Manethra memories. We know he has
that. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I didn't spoil anything for myself. Yeah. Right. And so some of the people here, one guy said he enjoys it. He said, but that's with multiple reads in mind. He says, I've read the series multiple times. He said, Cooladin's main flaw is his pride, which makes it all sweeter that he's sort of a killed off like a B-list villain. He says, we all know Matt's lucky. And he said, this actually sort of will propel Matt forward, right, with being sort of this great general. And we've seen Matt sort of fight. Right when he fights Galan, right?
Yeah.
Or Gawain and Galad. And so I even said that I would have been fine with that had they just shown us the fight. Had they shown us Matt versus Cooladin, I would be totally fine with it. I know you and I were talking. Because then it's sort of, you know, there's a bunch of different ways you could do it, right? Let's say Rand overextends himself with the power and is really weak. And then Cooladin shows up. And mm-hmm. he's got to fight him, but Rand's actually in this weakened state because he overextended himself with the power, which is not outside of the realm for Rand at this point in time.
Yes.
And then Matt sort of shows up, fights him, and wrecks him. And so it's like, that's so much better of a moment.
I know.
It's so much better of a moment than killing him off screen. I mean, how many hair tugs and how many times of the girls getting captured, and how many times of Elaine being sort of like, oh, I don't know, am I good enough? Could we pull out of this book, still have an immense amount in the entire series, and have Cooladin fight, have Cooladin's death on page?
You're asking. I mean, you're asking for an extra three paragraphs,
right?
Yeah, I know. And think about this too. In terms of like a show adaptation, would they ever?
Yeah, they're showing it.
You're right. I mean, would they exactly? They would never not show us that. And let's just say, like, Matt just walks into a tent, and everyone's just like, "Yeah, he killed Cooladin." Fans would be like, if you were just watching it for the first time, they'd be like, "What?" Like, we just had this villain build up, and you didn't show us an action fight scene sequence where he kills Cooladin. Like, we don't even believe it at that point then. And it's just like, and then it just never comes up again. It's like, yeah, he's dead. So move on.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
So I mean, even if it's just Matt, even if it's just that Matt, like, he's out doing, right, he's sort of out with his group of people. They're doing their thing. And he just comes across Cooladin, and they end up fighting, and he ends up beating him. Because they actually take the moment and sort of build it up to something later where they say, well, Rand's like, well, this is why I needed you and all this stuff. I mean, he beats Galad and Gawain so fast. It's like two pages. I mean,
right.
You really could have just written it. Maybe it's something that comes up later in the series, but I'm going to be honest, man, it kind of ruined the whole book.
Like, yeah, it just puts a bad taste in your mouth. And then as you go through, you're almost looking for like, oh, well, this, you know, didn't happen the way I thought it was going to go. And then it starts to kind of spiral a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So real quick. So some of the people who said it just in this Reddit, a lot of people who I think have finished it said it doesn't really bother me that much. Like, there's a lot of comments on this. So maybe I'm just sort of overreacting in the moment. I don't know. One guy said it's a poor story. It's a poor storytelling choice as. All the more so we wasted two books on him, but hey, we got circus chapters instead, so it's all good.
oh my god it's interesting because he's built as the you know the opposite of Rand, and he's going into this unknown Shido group, our IO group, where the Shido are. Yeah, it's
right. I guess my only thing is a lot of the people that are they're saying they're fine with it is they're talking about Cooladin being sort of a weak character. They're like, whatever, he's not important. But I guess I would argue
right now,
that
it seems like he's
right.
Yeah,
I guess I would just argue that if he's not that big of a character, then why did you build him up and make that the end of your last book?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't we just have Daisy Conger and some of the other people end up just being like, hey, you're not getting married. And that's the end of your book because it's, you know, it's just these are B characters. You can't end a book on a B character if you're going to do that. I mean, that's bad storytelling.
Yeah, and so a lot of times what he does, right, is like Robert Jordan has at the end of that book, you've got Osmodian and Lanfear doing their thing, and it's almost like because what happens here is Cooladin is supposed to be that minor. I mean, he seems like he's the major opposition, right? Our main host is fighting Cooladin and his Shido, who are raiding out of Kyrian. Right. That is the main fight. Like the most people are fixated on that. But Rand has this intro, like Samael is around, and like the Forsaken, right. And where is Lanfear, and Osmodian, what are you doing in my tent, and were you channeling or were you not? And it's almost like there's two things going on with Rand all the time. You've got two battles, where one we're focused on Cooladin, like you said, at the end of Shadow Rising, and then all throughout the Fires of Heaven. But then he really needs to focus in on the Forsaken. It's almost like he has to separate and let some of that go to Matt and to Perrin. And like you said, it'd be fine if that were the case. Like, but there's a way to do it that right. shifts that power to Matt or to Perrin to pick up some of what you know, Rand can't do everything, right? So if we have to move that villain over to Matt or Perrin, let's do that and then emphasize the Forsaken more instead of just doing it off screen quickly. Because it actually, Matt. Well, one thing it does is it, like Matt's character, for his character development, it kind of doesn't help it any that he just kills him off screen, right? I mean that he just. I don't think that it's. I mean, it makes Cooladin so insignificant that we didn't need to show it. but it was significant enough that Matt had to battle him and becomes this general now. And yeah,
right. Yeah, So I don't know. I didn't like it. We don't have to harp on it for forever, but I guess this is our last chapter of the book, and I do always try to sort of, all right, here's what I think about the book in a whole,
yeah,
and sort of a series, but that's okay. It's not a terrible book. It's not a bad series. It's not going to cause me to stop reading, you know, or think that the series is so bad. I would just say that it's by far my least favorite. In the series, but who knows, right? I've always heard like the slog of 7 through 9 is really bad, so maybe, you know, when we get to that, but
yeah,
but okay, I mean, but everyone talks about once you get past that, you get to the Brandon Sanderson books, they get great. So just because I don't like this thing doesn't mean that I think the whole, you know, series is bad. Yeah. It's still better than the Star Wars sequels, so
you know, makes more sense, right? There's still
still like a coherent plot, right? Anywho, all right. Well, hey, let's take a quick break here for, you know, one of our a message from our sponsors, and we'll come back and we'll dive into the final chapters here. Okay, we're back here, and we're gonna be diving through the final chapters here. So, chapter 52, Choices. 53, Fading Words. 54, To Camelin. 55, The Threads Burn. 56, Glowing Embers. So where we left, right, was that news had come to Kyrian, right? That the Ammerlin seat, dead, right? Ravin is taken over. Things are looking really, really bad. So chapter 52, Choices. So some of these chapters are a lot longer, which is why we didn't do sort of as many as we normally do. So here we go. So it starts off in Rand's point of view. Rand is preparing for his trip to Camelin the next morning. Avienda is with him, trying to tell him in her Aiel way that she wouldn't shame him in front of other men. Rand, as usual, doesn't understand what she's saying. Rand had met with the clan chiefs last night to discuss his plans. None of them tried to talk him out of it. They seemed to think in terms of Geato. The wise ones didn't argue with him either. They just made it clear that it's his obligation to Elaine didn't outweigh his obligation to the Aiel. Avienda mentions Lady Colavere came to see him last night. Rand forgot all about that. Avienda says that they had a talk and that he won't be bothered by women sent to him by Lady Colavere. She also says that the lady would be able to hide the evidence. Not the methods which Rand would have chosen, but it will work. Osmodian comes in. He asks permission to join Rand on his trip. Originally, the plan was for him to stay behind. Rand reluctantly agrees. Matt comes to see Rand as well. He tells how Malindara, attacked him and that he had to kill her. Now that the Forsaken have noticed him, he wants to join Rand too. Moraine and Egwene appear. Moraine hands Rand two letters, one of him to read later, and one for Tom, to be delivered the next time Rand sees him. She sees him in a strange mood this morning, and Rand wants to leave and get it over with, but Moraine tells him there is something on the docks he needs to see. Since everybody agrees he should go, Rand decides an hour delay won't hurt. They leave for the docks.
Yeah. So... yeah, okay, this is the setup, right? We're going to go to Camelin, and a fight has to be had here. Morghese has been killed, and daggone it, Ravine, we're coming for you. We're going to avenge this loss, and Rand is just, you know, upset about it. And he's got everybody in, right? Matt's now in, Avienda's in, Egwene is in, Moraine is going. It's an interesting piece that the Aiel are reminding him, don't forget just your prior obligations, or whatever, they don't outweigh the obligation that you have to your people here as well. That's where the Geato piece comes in, where it's like, right, you need to honor, he's honor bound to still kind of think about them as well. So, yes, you're going to go, but, I mean, at the same time, yeah, because it's interesting, right? He's just leaving all of them, and he's going to just travel and go to Camelin. And everything that was happening in Kyrian is just gone. We weren't in Camelin at all, man. We haven't been in Camelin in a long time, other than just bouncing to Morghese and her point of view. And then now Rand is like, I got to go. out. He's gone. He was thinking the whole time. He's thinking about Samael and his fight with him and the battle there outside of Kyrian. And now it's like, and actually it seems disconnected when we're first reading about it. And more Gaze is being essentially compelled by Ravine. Now we're like looking back at it going, okay, now we get why that plot line is in there, because we have to go to it with Rand because she's air quote killed. So yeah, it's crazy. But that's where we're at. We're headed there for a big fight.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we should point out that Moraine gives those letters, right? Here you go. Read this one later.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yes.
Give this one to Tom.
Yep.
So, okay. So then we shift and we're in Kadir's point of view. We're on the docks. Yet again, Kadir tries to think his way out of a difficult situation he's in. Lanvir has not returned to him in his dreams, but she left the burn as a reminder. The Aiel that slipped a note under his door hasn't contacted him, but yet may offer a way out. Kadir sees the party of the Dragon Reborn arrive, the Aes Sedai among them. Moraine came to see him last night and made him help her uncover the doorframe, Teron Greal. He is watching the group when the voice of Khalil interrupts him. He thought she died in the waste and isn't pleased to see her. They go into Kadir's wagon to talk. Once inside, Lanfear shows herself. She demands her to tell her what the dragon has been doing. Kadir starts reporting. Some of it is obviously not to Lanfear's liking.
Yeah, and so then he's a goner. I mean, like, essentially, it's like he's like skinned alive. She is really upset with him, and just this news, really not him, it's the news that Rand has been with another woman, because Kadir has been keeping tabs on Rand and you know, reporting, if you will, to other dark friends. Turns out those dark friends are actually way more higher up than he realized. They're actually the Forsaken, you know, taking other forms and disguising themselves, which was, I think, would be really cool for the show. That's something that, like, they could change the name of the dark friends and give them different names, and we not know who is Forsaken from season one. Man, we could have a season one situation where there's a dark friend that is going to turn, that actor is going to turn into someone else, or maybe change form. It there's a lot you can do with it. A lot of,
right,
you know,
it's almost like remember when Harry Potter was first coming out, right? And we were like a little bit into it, and until the final book came out, for people who didn't sort of grow up when the books were releasing, right? Mm-hmm. There was a huge deal, and way bigger than if you're just reading it. But the whole deal was, is Snape good or is Snape bad? Remember, yeah. I mean, it was like everyone was talking about it for years.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Is he good? Is he bad? Yeah, you could do a similar thing here where you introduce characters maybe whose name starts out as something else, and then later it's sort of revealed that they are a different character when you get to the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like that Celine with Lanfear thing, right? Like, maybe they don't name her Celine in the show.
Yes.
Maybe they name her something else. And
right.
It turns out she is Lanfear. That'd be cool.
Yeah, and it could be someone, maybe she's, yeah, and we're all, even book readers are speculating, like, is that her? Her name's not Celine, but is that Lanfear? That could be the new thing that we're trying to think and theorize about, because she showed up in multiple forms, right? We saw her in the tower. We've seen her as Celine. She's played a little girl, a beautiful girl. She's played someone who is not as attractive. I mean, she's all over the place. She's all sorts of different forms. And yeah, so, and here she is. So she's in on everything, and she's always around right now, Rand and Luce Theron, and trying to keep tabs on this. She set him up with a teacher, essentially, with Osmodian being his teacher. She's got her own thing going. So,
yeah. Okay. All right. Now we shift back and we're in Rand's point of view. So, arriving at the docks, Rand wants to know why Moraine brought him here. She remains silent. She checks the seals hidden in Kadir's wagon. Rand is about to return to the palace as Kadir's wagon explodes in a cloud of wood splinters. Lanfear steps out furious at Luce Theron because he let another woman touch him. Lanfear hits Moraine with a weave, and the Aes Sedai flung aside. Rand grabs the source and creates a barrier to shield the surroundings from the Forsaken's channeling. Memories of the dragon float through Rand's mind as he tells her he will never love one of the Forsaken. Lanfear promises to kill him for that. Egwene and Avienda move in to help Rand. Lanfear wants to know which one of them is Avienda. Both girls collapse as a result of one of Lanfear's weaves. Rand tries to distract her from the women. He manages to slice through her weaves. Lanfear staggers back to catch her balance and resumes her attack on Rand. Even with his Angreal, he is having difficulty keeping her from shielding him. He should call down lightning to kill her, but the memories from Luthien keep him from trying. He can't kill another woman. So this was actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because now there's some stakes to the Rand Luthien sort of connection coming in that's preventing him from doing things he needs to do.
Yeah, for sure, exactly. And he's this issue with killing women, and it affects what's happening here with Lanfear. It could have cost somebody else their life. I mean, he's doing everything he can to keep Lanfear off of the girls, right? Off of Avienda and Egwene, and then Moraine is there, and it's just a whole showdown. So she's like surrounded by some pretty powerful channelers, and Lanfear is just owning people. She's doing, I mean, this would be kind of one of those, a really cool battle sequence to see. It happens fast, right? Mm-hmm. It's very fast in the books, but if you slowed it down a little bit and showed us more or built it up more and kind of pulled it apart in a show, it's a pretty epic battle. Because this is almost like a precursor to then Rand fighting Ravine. Like, if you went a little bit longer, because like basically the next thing that happens is Moraine shoves her through the Tir Angreal, through the stone door, the red door, right? I mean, so if that happens a little bit later and there's more battling back and forth, and you can kind of infer that there is, but just it's so short. If you look in the book, it's just not very, very long.
Right.
So, and if you're not paying attention, like me sometimes, when I'm listening to an audiobook.
The next thing you know, you're like, wait, what just happened?
Yeah, exactly. Rand steps away and he's battling Ravine. I'm like, wait, we got to go back. What? I missed it. You know, it was that quick, so...
Right. Yeah. And I guess I can see where some people feel like Lanfear kind of comes out of nowhere. Because when's the last time you even saw her? Right?
I mean, well, yeah, and she's in disguise a lot of the time. And it's very quickly revealed. It's again, like I said, if you're not paying attention to Kadir and remembering, like, oh, yeah, who are all the characters around Kadir and this traveling group? I mean, Osmodian was the Gleeman. He's in with them. And you've got other individuals who the one girl who's sneaking off to, like, be with Rand, and it's also pretty brutal. Some of the stuff that batch of Dark Friends they're dark. I mean, it is just like some evil stuff going on in and among that group, and Lanfear is mixed in with them, but you don't really know it. And that's the thing that's kind of neat about it. Once it's revealed, it's like, oh, okay, she's been there, and she is keeping tabs on things, and she is maybe checking in on this Osmodian situation and how is her lover doing, right? I mean, Lanfear tells Min, right, at the end of the Great Hunt to take care of him type of thing, right? Just for now, like, that's okay. But then the fact that he actually sleeps with Avienda, no. Crossed the line for Lanfear.
I know, kind of weird.
Yeah, but...
So anyway, so then we cut to Moraine's point of view, right? And Moraine recovers from the blow Lanfear dealt her. She realizes this is the moment when she must do what she has known she must since her visit to Rudion. She has made the arrangements. Lan will have to go on without her. Moraine sees Lanfear standing close to the doorframe, tearing Grial in the wagon. She closes in on the Forsaken, embraces the source, and throws herself at Lanfear, pushing them both through the doorframe. White light swallows everything.
Yeah, so this is her sacrifice, and I just... So when she goes to Rudion, she goes through the... Tir Angreal there, and she sees things. She also has gone, and she asked the questions back in Tir. So she's been gathering information as to, like, what is her role to play with Rand, and what is it that she's going to need to do. So, yeah, just before they set out for the city of Camelin to confront the Forsaken Ravine, Moraine took Rand, Matt, Egwene, Avienda, and Lan to the docks of Kyrian. While at Rudion, Moraine had entered a Tir Angreal that showed her hundreds of possible futures. Furthermore, she knew that if she wasn't present at the docks that day, Lanfear, a Forsaken who was obsessed with him, might take control over Rand. When Rand refused to kill Lanfear, even in his own defense, Moraine took matters into her own hands. The twisted redstone doorframe from Rudion was present/nearby, and Moraine shoved Lanfear through it by tackling her. She straight on tackles Lanfear, right? and thus joined her inside, yeah, ending that assault. So, yeah.
So they go through the door frame, right? They go through it. I mean, you know, I don't know. Does Moraine die? It doesn't feel like it to me.
Okay, and you can say that. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying a dang thing, but yeah, I mean, like, it is. Yeah, man, she makes a sacrifice, right? I mean, she sacrifices herself to take Lanfear out.
Right,
Lanfear's powerful.
Well, they go through the door frame, right? You mm-hmm. know, it's like, okay,
and we've been through that door.
It's kind of right.
So we know it's like what the elfin, right. the snakes and foxes, right? That's the realm to which we're going, which is where Moraine was talking about back in Tyr, and then again in Rudion, Matt goes through there as well. Yeah, so that's like, and since you know that, I think you're allowed to kind of infer like, that's a good question. Is she dead? Are they trapped? Are they trapped forever in
there? Nobody's ever really gone.
Wow, more Star Wars quotes coming in. I mean, it's just, she tackles. I mean, like, forget right. the power. Straight up, like, linebacker tackled her right to the door.
You think we're going to see that?
God, that'd be awesome.
Well, Rosamund Pike better start hitting some weights, man, because she's like a dainty little woman. I mean,
oh, she can do it, man.
Tackling people,
she can lower that shoulder. She'll
all 1 inch of the shoulder. I mean, my God, hey, man, like, she's gonna—it's like a—it's like a break in half.
I think she can do it. I think she could roll tackler. You know,
she was in what was that movie? She was in Wrath of the Titans, the second one.
Oh, was she?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so
I mean, you know, she's riding around on horses and swinging swords and stuff. I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
All right, I suppose.
Yeah, she's good. She's good. I don't know. I feel like they, in the show, they might actually use the power to blast her through. But then it's like, how does she go through herself too? So it's almost like, yeah, she has to kind of tackle her and run her through it physically. And was there no way just to blow air? I mean, I have to go back and actually read some of the line by line of that fight scene, but you wonder, was there another way? I think Lanfear, what's unexpected is everyone, they rely so much on the power and channeling. It's sort of like you forget there's this hand-to-hand combat that they could do that is unexpected. So Moraine does the unexpected.
Yeah, holy crap, hold on a second here.
Yeah,
is this a legit photo of Rosamund Pike?
Let me show you that.
Let me screen share this.
Okay.
Where's my screen share at?
Here, I'll give it to you. I'll give you the option here, my friend. There you go. Is this better? What is this from a movie? By the way, don't forget to check out our YouTube friends, where we post the video version.
First of all, look at the gains there. This is in Wrath of the Titans. But hold on, this one it's not letting me zoom in, but I mean, look at the action in the tricep.
Yeah, absolutely, man. See, I told you, she's all got right. this.
She could.
Yeah.
But then you look at photos of her and you're like,
hey, it just that season, Matt, right. they're like, hey, we need you to, you know, she goes back in and right. trains for the
But
role.
Then you look at her right here. I mean, come on, man. She when you look at her there, it's like she's not tackling anybody.
You know what's crazy?
She has to get back in the gym.
Okay, well, here's the thing. She is all actors. I think it's crazy how much weight they can drop or put on and muscle. I mean, right. The things they do for roles is kind of it's wild. I have mad respect for them. So
right. Well, you can also do a lot with, you know, CGI and stuff. It's how Gal. I mean, I'm not saying obviously Gal Gadot is like she's pretty physically fit in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, it's like when you see her like. You know, when you see her, you know, like charge somebody and then they go flying like 100 yards because it's
Matt.
You know,
she actually did that in a movie. I've seen the behind the scenes, man. This is, come on. What are you trying to take away from the
when she punches Superman, you know, and he goes
through
a
wall.
Flying,
yeah. Like,
through a wall. Yeah.
It's real.
Right.
We have kids listening. OK, this is real stuff. Right. Oh, gosh.
OK. All right. Let's OK. Boom. Let's get
next. Let's get next back chapter. Here.
So. So chapter 53, fading words here. So Rand sees Moraine hurl herself at Lanfear and the white light swallows both. He gets up and grabs Lan, who is staggering past him. Rand tells Lan he can't follow, but the warder already knows. Their bond is broken. Rand sees Egwene and Avienda with Matt and Asmodian. Egwene seems to be hurt. Sorella and the other wise ones push their way through the crowds to reach them. They say Egwene will be fine, but she needs rest. She won't go to Camelin with him, and she won't visit the World of Dreams for a while either. Rand turns back to Lan and tries to apologize for not saving Moraine. Lan says Moraine was as much a soldier as he was, and that she accepted the risk. Rand asks Lan if he wants to stay around the warder, but the warder explains Moraine did something to his bond that forces him to find a new Aes Sedai. He has to go. Lan tells Rand that if he sees Nynaeve, he should tell her Lan found someone else. Ooh. He also tells Rand that if he ever loves a woman, he should leave her. That's the best thing he can do for her. With that, the warder leaves. Rand now takes the time to read the letter Moraine gives him. It explains Moraine has known this moment was coming since her visit to Rudion. The alternatives were Rand dying or Rand becoming Lanfear's devoted lover. Either way was unacceptable. She also knew that she might not be able to kill. She also knew that he might not be able to kill a woman. She leaves a few final warnings for him. One is to tell Lan that what she did was for the best. The second is to not trust any Aes Sedai, at least not to trust Natale. Apparently, she found out who he was. It also asks him to deliver the second letter to Tom. Rand is still contemplating the content of the letter when Sulyn approaches him. She is very upset with him for not following any of the maidens to come with him to Camelin. Mm-hmm. In very blunt terms, she explains to Rand that the spear is what she is, and that he nor any other man has the right to change her. If Rand will not allow the maidens to carry his honor, she'd rather die. Rand explains his reluctance to send women into battle to her, but it doesn't seem to impress the maiden. Rand remarks she doesn't leave him much of a choice. Sulyn replies, Geato always leaves you a choice. Rand suppresses his anger at the, it doesn't say, but in his eyes, ridiculous, at the ridiculous demands of Geato, and tells Sulyn he will allow as many maidens as the members of the other societies are taking. Satisfied, Sulyn leaves to gather them. Matt joins Rand and looks at the maidens leaving. Rand wants to know why he seems so cheerful. Matt answers it's because he's alive, and he says it is time to roll the dice, and Rand agrees.
Man, this is okay. So Matt right there, he's happy to be alive, right? Okay, so Moraine has the letter. She's altered her bond with Lan. By the way, I forgot to mention that red doorframe is on fire and melts. That's the other big thing. You can't just go running in after Moraine and Lanfear. That thing is destroyed because of all the channeling and everything that's going on around it. So Moraine foresees this. It's also a bit scary that Moraine figures out that who Asmodian is. And she knows that Rand is near him. Doesn't say anything for what reason? Is it because she knows Rand is using him or doesn't want to expose that? But remember, Rand really did not want anyone to know that he was playing with fire. Meaning one of the Forsaken was in and among and around everyone in the same tent. Like if Avienda and others knew that they were sitting side by side with one of the Forsaken who was playing his musical instruments and telling stories, and he's pretending to be a Gleeman, and Rand actually has him teaching him. I mean, that's pretty wild. And Moraine knew that, and you're like, dang, what else did Moraine know? And so that piece is kind of cool because of the letters that are left over. One needs to go to Tom. Something with Lan now has been prearranged, and she knew that what she saw, that the role she had to play was Rand's either going to die or become, you know, infatuated with Lanfear. Neither one of those things can happen. So she then takes her out and takes her off the board. So Rand can move forward and develop and do what he has to do. And it's just like, the other big thing is to trust no Aes Sedai. That's huge, Matt. That is that one little line right there, that's going to guide. And he already didn't trust a lot of people, but he made Moraine swear things to him. And, you know, Moraine tried everything she could just to stay close and near him, to guide him, to show that, like, I'm not here to hurt you. I'm not trying to gentle you or take you in or whatever, but you do need guidance. You do need to be alive for Tarmon Gaiden. You need to be there for the last battle, and I can help you with that. And eventually she had to do things that were outside of her character and outside of what she thought was proper to be near him. And I don't know if you remember that whole bit where she basically was, like, begging him to stay near him and just acting, and I don't know, Ran was, yeah. But now she's saying, don't trust any other Aes Sedai. And so I right. think Ran now is looking back going, I had something more and more Moraine than I realized, which we can talk about later. But, yeah.
Right. Yeah, because remember, they've had their sort of issues, right?
Yeah.
Like, back going back and forth of, she's not listening to me, and she's not going to control me, and all this stuff, yeah. So... okay, chapter 54 to Caemlyn. Starting off with Rand here. Some 500 maidens Sulan managed to get together follow Rand to the Sun Palace, where Bael is waiting for them. Rand manages to catch a part of the conversation between Avienda and the Wise Ones. She is to guard him closely. Amys also hints at some success of Avienda's with the other Wise Ones don't know about. Rand doesn't understand what they mean by the Wise Ones, but the Wise Ones see him and make it clear whatever they are discussing is not for his ears. Bael quickly gathers the Aiel and that are to accompany Rand. Matt and Osmodian are also ready to leave. Rand creates a gateway and a skimming platform as large as he can. After skimming through the void between the pattern, they arrive in Caemlyn, near a place where Rand first met Elaine. The Aiel spread out into the city. Without warning, Trollocs and Murderall appear, and the battle begins. Lightning starts raining from the sky. Rand is barely fast enough to raise a shield. He envelops most of the inner city in and ties it off. He has to move quickly. Ravine obviously knows he is here. Rand takes a moment to survey the damage the volley of lightning bolts has done. The Forsaken don't care if it hits any of his own. Rand sees Avienda and Matt lying dead. Osmodian has been turned into a charred corpse. Anger rises in Rand, and he yells Ravine's name. Channeling to kill the shadow spawn around him, Rand becomes death.
Yeah, so, like, and again, these things happen fast. So you're reading, and you almost have to go back. This is one of those moments where the reader wants you to be like, wait, what? And you go back,
and you
read that again, because you're like, excuse me? So the attack happens right away, lightning attack. It's instant. I mean, he's just raining down so much lightning and fury on... He doesn't care if he kills Trollocs, Murdral, or he wants to kill as many people in that area as he can, whether it be his own or Rand's. Didn't matter. And he ends up getting Avienda, Matt, and Osmodian. Like, dang. That's radical. That is radical. And they are dead.
Yeah.
They're dead. So... And in the audiobook, you can hear Michael Kramer does the voices, you know, Rand's yelling out, Ravine! He's like yelling
at He's great.
He's really
the audio, right. Yeah.
It's
yeah,
cool.
Both of the audiobook people, they're great.
Right.
So then it shifts, and we're in Nynaeve's point of view, right? An angry Nynaeve is trying to reach Suan, trying to teach, Suan the few things she has learned about the world of dreams. Teaching Aes Sedai is not a pleasant experience. They don't make obedient pupils. Suan remarks on Nynaeve's bad temper. She guesses it may be the fact that Theodrin has been assigned to help break Nynaeve's block. Suan is right, of course. The failure and Theodrin's methods do little to help Nynaeve's temper. Nynaeve strikes back with a remark about Suan having to serve Garth Brynn. Before she knows it, she and Suan are rolling on the floor trying to yank each other's hair out by the roots.
Which is crazy. It's just ridiculous. Comical.
Because, one book ago, it's like, you would have been wrecked.
Like, yeah, it's like the Omerlin seat versus, like, the accepted. It's crazy.
The fight goes on for a while until Suan realizes the absurdity of the situation and stops. It takes Nynaeve a while longer, but in the end, they decide to handle their differences as adults and just yell at each other. During the conversation, Nynaeve sees a face from the corner of her eye. Was that Mogideon? She tries to convince Suan to return to her own dreams, but Suan demands Nynaeve continue teaching her. Nynaeve sees no other solution than to take the Terran Greal Suwan is using away from her. Too late, she realizes she didn't know what happens if you do that. No time to think about it, Nynaeve moves to another location in the world of dreams. She still doesn't know if it was Mogideon she saw. Then the Forsaken shows up. Nynaeve was right after all. She tries to shield the Forsaken with all of her strength, but Mogideon brushes her weave effortlessly aside. Mogideon captures her in a weave of her own. Then Birgit shows up on the scene. She fires an arrow at Mogideon, but the Forsaken makes it disappear long before it can hit her. She channels and changes Birgit into a child plaything with a toy bow. Fear rises in Nynaeve. She falls to her knees and begs the Forsaken not to hurt her as the Forsaken draws her closer using the One Power. An idea comes to Nynaeve, but she has to get close enough. Finally, the Forsaken is in reach. Nynaeve forms the image of an Adam, and in her mind, it snaps and shuts around the Forsaken. Rage and horror reach Nynaeve through the Adam, but there is no escaping. Nynaeve makes Mogideon restore Birgit. It turns out Birgit saw Suwan wake up briefly and use the Terran Greal to go check on Nynaeve. Mogideon pleads for her life now. She has knowledge that could be useful. Nynaeve hesitates to kill the Forsaken. Mogideon tells them about the trap Ravine set up in Caenlyn. He doesn't trust the other Forsaken who are plotting to have Rand attack Samael in Ilion. Nynaeve decides to take Mogideon to the reflection of Caenlyn in the World of Dreams to see if she can do anything from there. Birgit is waking up, so she can't go with Nynaeve, with warning to the Forsaken that anything that happens to her will be magnified tenfold by the Adam they set off in the capital of Andor.
Okay, so this is one this is interesting, and so this Adam conversation is going to be something we're going to be talking about for a while, actually. And this is my question to listeners. Like, all she had to do was form that the image of that in her mind. Can anyone do that? And like do you just like it? Because all she has to do is be close enough to like form that and make it like latch onto her, right, and collar her, and then she's got her. But it's not real, right? It's right. Unless it's just in her mind, it's real. So can't she kind of in her mind, couldn't Mogideon say, and again, I honestly, legitimately, someone send me a pigeon or DM me, whatever, at womprat_2m, send us an email at, or thehornofvalir@gmail.com, because I've always been a little confused by this part. Like, because it's in the dream world. You know, I know what happens when you put an Adam on someone. We saw Egwene in one. They can't get out of it. You can't channel against it. You can't do anything. So is it because of its properties in the real world that when you're dreaming about it or when you put it on someone in the dream world that it's just that not something they can dream themselves out of or they can't, like, think themselves out of? You know what I mean? Because you should be able to almost, like, undo. So the bow shot that comes from Silverbow, right, is just, it evaporates because Mogideon knows it's not real. She can just in her mind manipulate her surroundings. The girls, as they think about their clothing, it changes all the time, right? If they're thinking about a see-through dress, next thing they know, they got to be careful of their thoughts because they're wearing a see-through dress, you know, that's all the time. That's what they talk about. So, I don't know. I just think it's interesting to me. I've never really, how does that work, you know? So that's a question for other people, because I don't know. It's cool, though. It's a cool moment because I think she's captured. Like, when you look at Nynaeve, you're like, oh, she's gone. Mogideon has her, right? I mean, this was a big, oh, no. The wise ones told you guys about this world. You have no idea what you're doing here. Mogideon and Lanfear know this realm better than anyone, and you're here. You're not, like, Nynaeve's not even a dreamer. I mean, Egwene is the one who has the gift and this talent to be more fluent in dreams and the dream world and all this stuff, and it's Nynaeve who's chasing down Mogideon. And it's like, oh, crap.
Yeah, but that sort of speaks to Nynaeve's character, right? Is she does always sort of have this, not like I'm necessarily better than you type of a thing, but kind of like a Nynaeve knows best. I don't know, you know.
It's, yeah.
She's not like arrogant, like I'm better.
She's
than
the wisdom,
you,
man.
Sort of just right.
Right. She's the wisdom. So yeah,
here she is talking down to Suwan. It's like, yeah, okay, Suwan's gentle, but it's like she literally like knows way more about Aes Sedai than you could ever, like, begin to hope to know.
Yeah, there is kind of a always, not always, but sometimes there's this power struggle between Aes Sedai and some of the younger girls, and like who knows more what, and like who's gonna give who what information. It's interesting, but you're right. Yeah, Nynaeve's not. Yeah, the whole bit with Suan is interesting, and then yeah, it's her overconfidence. She goes into this world and just makes this almost a big mistake, but now she has a big gain in that she has Mogideon, and she was afraid of her, and she beat her before. She gets away, and then
right.
So yeah, now they're going to Camelon though, and that is kind of cool. So she's now in the place where Rand is fighting Ravine, but she's in the reflection of that. She is in the dream world version of that. At the same time.
Okay, all right. So chapter 55 here. So second to last chapter here. The threads burn.
Yes, they
do. So this one jumps around. This one jumps around a lot. Yeah. So we start off with Rand. Rand chases Ravine through the royal palace, stopping only to kill the shadow spawn that get in his way. The damage to the palace is considerable. In the void, thoughts of Luz Theron bubble up. And thoughts of those who died already in this attack. Rand counters anything Ravine uses against him. To Rand's surprise, that includes Balefire. Rand comes to the residue of a gateway, not the same as the one he uses, but he recognizes it anyway. Rand follows Ravine to a reflection of the royal palace. Rand begins to explore this new place and finds out the rules that apply here. He starts looking for Ravine because he wants to see him dead. Then we jump to Nynaeve. Nynaeve takes cover from the weaves Rand and Ravine are throwing at each other. She feels Mogideon's fear through the Adam. Mogideon tells her that the others are here in the flesh and that they can wield much more of the power that way. Whatever Nynaeve and she can muster will pale in comparison. Nynaeve wants to push on anyway. Mogideon refuses, and Nynaeve uses the Adam to make her go on. Mogideon is terrified but has no choice to go on. Then we can go back to Rand. The gateway was a trap, and Rand walked right into it. Ravine is doing something to Rand, and he feels the source slipping away from him. Still, he has the power for one more strike. But where? Roaring the Forsaken's name, Rand tries to draw him out. Back to Nynaeve. The reflection of the palace is shaken to the core by the battle between Rand and Ravine. Nynaeve is terrified but pushes on, looking for him anyway. When she spots him, she draws all the power Mogideon can muster. Ravine is distracted by Rand and doesn't notice her at first. She throws everything she has against Ravine. The fear she feels through the Adam is replaced by something else now. Nynaeve feels resignation. The Forsaken expects to die here. Back to Rand. Not understanding what is happening to Ravine, Rand seizes the chance and Balefires him with every scrap of the power he can draw.
Jeez.
Which we've been told over and over and over again is a super no-no.
Yeah.
against ridiculously incredible people, you know. So Nynaeve is trying to maintain the weave as Rand's Balefire hits Ravine. Relief floods through the Adam. Nynaeve goes to meet Rand. She heals him of his wounds, except the old one on his side. Then she tells him he must leave. Being in the world of dreams in the flesh is dangerous. Rand passes on Lan's message to Nynaeve and adds to tell Elaine the same. He has found someone else, too. It is dangerous to love him. Mm-hmm. Then he leaves the world of dreams. The problem of what to do with Mogideon remains. Nynaeve can't just kill her, but an idea comes to her. She makes the Forsaken drink fork root. Before Mogideon falls asleep, she tells her that Mogideon has given her some clues of her location in the real world. They will see each other in Sidar soon.
Yeah.
So back to Rand. Rand runs through the royal palace. The damage seems somehow less than it looked the last time he passed through. Outside, there's still fighting going on. Rand sees fireballs being used against the shadow spawn. Rand channels tiny flows of balefire and kills the number of fades and trollocs. This tips the battle. The shadow spawn break and run. Running down into the plaza, Rand finds Avienda and Matt and Asmodian, who are all still alive. It takes him a moment to understand that the huge bar of balefire that killed Ravine must have undone their deaths. Too many others are still dead, though. Rand hugs Avienda, you know, glad that she is still alive. Bale and Sulin come in to report. The Trollocs are running, and the Royal Guard have joined the fight against them. Rand gives orders to pursue the Trollocs. They shouldn't be allowed to roam the countryside. So, Balefire
for the win, baby. For the win. I mean, it's crazy. He's told not to use it, and you can see now the bars and the magnitude or whatever that you to which you use Balefire matters. Gosh, again, Lady Heather who brought this up, like the threads of a person's life or their actions and all that kind of stuff, as they're hit with it, the more they're hit with it, the further back that thread will kind of burn and can undo things that were woven into the pattern. As it burns back, they're unwoven and they're undone. So, like, Avienda, Asmodian, and Matt are brought back to life, and those others who are struck with the original lightning blast. Now, others have fallen as well to Shadowspawn and Murdraw and things like that, and Rand is hitting them, you know, dink, 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 with little tiny bits of Balefire, right? That just, as he hits them, like somebody that they killed moments ago might be brought back to life and not remember, you know, or be kind of like, you know, like what happened, right? So that it's, yeah, all around Balefire for the win. It's a cool bit with the World of Dreams, right? He steps there in the flesh, not something we have, you know, heard a whole lot about. We've heard a little bit about it with Perrin and Hopper warning him and things like that with Slayer. But now we see that you can step into this realm in your true form. So, like, when Nynaeve is in the World of Dreams, her body is still laying in bed somewhere, right? And she's gone to Teleron Riad on her own, but her body is, like, in her spirit, right? Her essence is there.
Right.
And same with Mogideon. So Mogideon is laying asleep somewhere, and Nynaeve knows where she's at, and she's had her drink the fork root, which is going to make her not channel and pass out, and so then she can go find her in the real world and then attach, you know. And we'll get to what she does with her later. But, so, there you go. Just interesting stuff, man. I mean, it's like, it took Nynaeve showing up there as well to win this thing. Ravine had him. And it does show you that Rand is at a disadvantage because these Forsaken, they have full knowledge. They know stuff from the Age of Legends that Rand cannot remember. And he and Luthien are having this battle in his mind, trying to, for control over Sidene and just a sharing of information and ideas. Sometimes it floats to the surface. Sometimes bubbles of thoughts float, you know, to the surface. But most of the time, Rand is on his own kind of right now, trying to figure out what to do.
Right. And he's just, seems like he's taking all these, you know, Forsaken down one by one. I mean, whether it's with a little bit of help or whatever, it doesn't seem to matter.
He's because he's the Dragon Reborn.
Right.
Let him ride again on the winds of time. I mean, he is what he is, right? So, which is cool. I mean, gosh, the more it's like, I've been rereading the series and looking at choice and fate in this series. I've been going back and forth on my thoughts, and I feel like I need to have an all out conversation with people about coincidence and luck and chance and how all those things work into our real life world where we also have free will to do what we want, because he's the Dragon Reborn, and it's almost like Moraine is seeing things like all these different possible outcomes that could be, right? And she has to force things into a pattern where in which it's going to help Rand be successful. But that's also her choice to do that. But she's also seeing predetermined and pre-laid weaves. And it's crazy. It's kind of a mind twist, if you will, when you start to think about it all and how it all shapes out. How the wheel weaves as it wills.
Yes. So. Well, I mean, does the wheel weave, though? I mean, I guess I don't know. I mean, it seems to me like all you got to do is go in and Balefire stuff and you can kind of weave it however you want.
That's a really good point. I mean, that right there is actually, but is that something that was already, you know, I mean, right. Yeah, that's an interesting concept because you're inside of the wheel itself and you have the ability to do something that undoes what the wheel has woven. Right.
It's sort of the predestination versus sort of free will.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting. Right. It's just something we'll keep bringing up from time to time, and it's going to be in all the books and all the way up to the very end, my friend. So it'll be interesting. But anyway, this was a cool kind of fight scenes. That bit is awesome. I get people get hung up on the Moraine stuff and that pre-battle that happens first, but then I think this stuff with I didn't imagine us going there. I thought the battle was going to stay in the real world, and then we're in right. Thing, we're in the dream world, and we're battling away, and it's like, what? So, and Moff Gideon's fear is real. She is scared to death that they are going to be killed.
Right.
Because you are so much right. stronger in the flesh than you are, you know, spiritly.
But it's more dangerous.
More dangerous for you. Yes. Very much so.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. So, final chapter here, Glowing Embers. So, we start off with Rand. Rand is looking down at one of the gardens of the royal palace. He sees Matt and Avienda talking to each other. They're leaving the hunt of the Trollocs to the others. When the city gates close, it's unlikely many will escape. Davram Brashear comes to see Rand. The Saldaean general has been sent on a mission by his queen to make sure that the false dragon doesn't bother Saldaea anymore. He left his army north of the border of Andor and went to see Morghaes, but was ignored by Gabriel. Now he hears Morghaes may be dead. Rand tells them that Morghaes and Gabriel are dead. He also explains to Bashir that he can't have Taim. Rand wasn't planning on revealing this so soon, but he plans on giving any man who can channel amnesty. Why should a man be hunted down because he can do what Rand can? With the last battle coming, they will need every one of them. Yeah, let's go.
Right? This is it, man. This is it. So no more of this hunting down of false dragons. That's BS. Rand's like, that's over.
Yeah.
So, and this is his decree. It goes out to it's going to be, right? He's telling Bashir about this, like, not anymore.
So here we go. So the Aes Sedai are about to be like, excuse me?
What?
Yeah. So Bashir notes that he has conquered Tyr, got the support of the Aiel, rules in Kyrian, and now in Camelon too. Will Rand go on to conquer the world? Rand tells him he will if he must. Humanity cannot be allowed to keep fighting its own petty battles with the last battle on the horizon. He'd welcome any ruler who would ally with him, but so far he's only encountered hostility. Bashir can't speak for the Borderlands or even Saldaea, but he tells Rand the Borderlands will come to his banner. He offers his service and that of the 9,000 Saldaean horses. Let's go.
Let's go.
Okay.
Let's go.
But I don't know. Am I getting too hyped up about the end of this book too soon? Is this all going to be stuff that Jordan just throws away?
I love the next book, and I'll tell you about that in a second. I love it. So let's keep going.
So then we shift to Osmodian. Osmodian leaves Matt and Avienda in the garden. They aren't listening to his music anyway. He has more or less figured out what's happened to him. Many people told him they saw him dead. He feels his protection from the great Lord is gone. Mm-hmm. He's mortal now, and the taint affects him. He steps through a door looking for a pantry to look for some decent wine, and has just enough time to recognize his killer before death takes him.
Like, what?
Yeah.
Osmodian, dead. He was brought back. Like, it's just it's back and forth, right? I mean,
right.
Is he alive? Is he dead?
Is he a dark friend anymore, though? Don't think so.
Yeah, isn't that interesting that he's lost that connection, that protection or whatever from
the Dark Lord? He's a mortal person. He's found the light.
Has he? Yeah.
Is he like Ingtar? He's found the light.
I mean, he's at least just kind of, he's allowed to do whatever he wants. That's an interesting question. Like, could he go back and reestablish his connection with the Dark Lord or repledge himself or something? But it seems like whatever, because he swore loyalty and dark friends can be called upon by other dark friends and by the Forsaken because of their oaths and stuff like that. So, yeah, if they don't want to, what Rand says to Ingtar is, I think you just have to stop wanting to be one or whatever. But it's more than that with the Forsaken, and I kind of forget sometimes that he has that moment of clarity where he's like, oh yeah, I've been separated. The taint now on Saidin affects me. So
yeah. All right, Ez, and then we shift to Morghaes. Big surprise here.
Right.
She's not dead.
She is not dead.
Right.
Yeah.
Obviously. Yeah. Didn't we say that last time because we were like, oh, they said Morghaes is dead, but then they immediately say afterwards, well, I don't know, she hasn't. Okay.
Right, I know. Yeah.
So the tension between Morghaes and Talonvor is growing. Seeing him next to the round Basil Gil reminds her of how fit and tall he is. Tallinvor no longer looks up to her like a queen. Their party went to see Garth Brynn in Cor Springs, but he has gone to chase some barn burners. Morghese has no choice but to look for allies elsewhere. Linny has noticed the tension between Morghese and Tallinvor. She remarks that there's no point in letting the honey age too long before eating it. Morghese tells her to put those silly ideas out of her head. The group comes to the edge of the Alterin Forest they were riding through. Again, Tallinvor asks if she wants to go on with this. She does. She will have her throne back.
Yeah. Will she? Is she going to? Yeah, I mean, so she wants to. The one thing in this
She should go hang out with Suwan, man. They're in the same boat.
Right.
Deposed.
Deposed, yeah. God. Well, Gabriel really does do a number on the people there and all the lords, and you get into some of the politics, right? And like the people who didn't support Morghese are the ones that are like surrounding Gabriel, and her friends, when she was compulsed, she said nasty things to them and sent them away. And Garth Brynn, right, was sent away, and they were confused about that the whole time. Like, what is he doing here? What did he do to kind of piss off Morghese? Why would she ever do that? Well, we find out really she wasn't in control of herself when she did that. That's what's revealed to us here. So, yeah, I mean, that's then. How do you recover from all that loss? Where how do you tell someone, "Hey, I wasn't in control, excuse me, of my actions. I was being compelled to do these things," and then who's going to believe that? You know,
right?
So
yeah, so interesting, interesting. So, where do you now that we've finished here? Where is this? Have you done a ranking? Where is
yeah,
this ranking?
I like.
Your,
I actually like your ranking. When you said it earlier, I think. I don't know. I guess you could go, like, the Dragon Reborn is cooler. I think the Dragon Reborn is a cooler book than this.
Right.
But I don't know. I at my bottom three, I think I would have, I think, or my bottom two, they're tied. Like, I think this is as, well, I don't know, maybe not. I don't know.
So of the five we've already read, what do you think is your
So
rank?
Great Hunt's number one. Followed by followed by either the Eye of the World or Shadow Rising, so either right. one
so
I could
so
I could go
in
back
the same,
and forth yeah
we're in the same
yeah
so then where do you think you'd rank this in terms of the whole series yeah
ooh I don't know I like this book more than some people, and for some people this is their favorite book. Isn't that crazy?
Really? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm sure every yeah. book is somebody's favorite. Yeah.
Just because I think all the action here at the end and this battle and the things with the Balefire and the power and
right.
things are revealed and mysteries starting with Lan and then the notes and Moraine is gone. I mean, so, you know, people are like, what the heck? I mean, how it plays out and the execution of it is different, but the ideas and the revelations and some of that stuff, you're left with a lot of, like, after this book. If this was coming out and you were theorizing for the next book, by God, you would be all over the place. Like, is Moraine dead? What's Morghese going to do? Like,
right.
who killed Osmodian? That goes on for eight. Like, that was a huge yeah. deal. So,
yeah. I actually think that I will enjoy. So, when we get to like season three or four, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe three. And this is like a season finale.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff. I think that I will enjoy this more on television than
yep.
I did in the book.
And I think they'll correct some of the stuff that we're talking about. I think we'll see a Coolin in battle. I think there'll be more stuff with Moraine. We might even see Moraine go through, because you can do different types of irony, right? Where we get to see what Moraine sees or more of her information in Rudion. And then we're like, oh my God, Rand, quit treating her like this. Moraine is literally going to save your life later. Whereas like the way we're reading it now is we don't know why Moraine, what she saw or what is happening. And we're kind of like, yeah, Rand doesn't trust Aes Sedai, so we get why he's not trusting Moraine. But if we knew what she knew and we were with her on all of her private little meetings and her, because she kind of takes a back seat and she starts to sit back here and really just, she knows where she needs to get to and what role she has to play to help and preserve, make her the sacrifice that she has to make for Rand and for him to move forward. And that, you know, either it's like you don't see it coming and it's a big surprise to us, or we see it and we build up anger and resentment, or we start to get frustrated with Rand and others around her because they don't realize what an awesome sacrifice she's trying to make and why she's trying, that she is being true in her intentions with Rand, and she's not trying to mislead him or guide him in the way that, like, it's insinuated that the guiding by the Aes Sedai would be a bad thing. And for her, it's really not. She's trying to do what's best. So,
yeah. Okay. All right, guys. Well, hey, that's it. That is our, we're moving on as we are no longer into, we are out of the fires of heaven and we are into Lords of Chaos.
Yeah. And so we won't be bringing up Cooladin again. All right. We won't be talking about these things. So I know we've harped on it for the last two parts, but we will move on. And I wanted to say, going into this next book, we have a massive prologue, right? A massive prologue. What is it? 2 hours or something?
Yeah,
more?
It's pretty long. So
it's a full episode, friends. Yeah, we're going
to. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely going to be a full episode. And then I guess the other thing is, isn't this kind of, weren't these sort of trilogies, like people refer to these as sort of two trilogies?
Yeah, kind of. Yes. So this would be book six we're going into. And yeah, people do kind of look at them as trilogies. I forget the kind of progression that when Robert Jordan made splits in books and stuff like that, because you can see clearly plot lines like Suan and Loghain and Min, all that stuff, just it's in there and it falls off. Like, did he have more of this, like these two books written? And it was like, okay, I need to actually introduce some of that earlier, and I can't save all of it for, you know, the next book, for book six. And so book five needs to include some of this stuff, you know, because it does feel weird sometimes, right? Like, you leave out Perrin, but then you're going to weave in some stuff with the White Tower, and you have to talk about its division and so on. So just so many characters and so many plot lines and stories that have to interconnect and be tabled and decide when do you table that and when to move on. I would love to hear someone, a panel at JordanCon or whatever, talk about what that was like from an editing standpoint. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But
awesome. Okay, guys. All right. Well, hey, that is it for us. So we want to thank you for answering the call. In our next episode, we will be discussing the Lords of Chaos prologue.
Yep, absolutely, friends. If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a message at thehornofvalir@gmail.com.
We will see you soon. And remember that the grave is no bar to our call.
Yeah, and the grave,
including moraines, maybe.
yeah, including moraines and everyone else. Like, actually, you know what? Anyone who goes to the grave, y'all can come back. All right, little balefire.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.